across Europe. This is Previously in Europe, a podcast about what's previously in Europe. I'm your co-host Hugh in London. I'm here with the co-host Kieran in Berlin. Say hello, Kieran.
I have some dice with me, and I'm going to see if the microphone can pick them up. Maybe.
Yeah, no, I heard that. Yeah, okay, so there'll be dice in this episode.
Nice.
So this is a very special episode of Previously in Europe, where we're going to talk about some things that will be subsequently in Europe, as opposed to previously. And that is because we are going on hiatus for a while, because much like the way Macron is the papa, or daddy, if you will, of France, Kieran is himself about to become a daddy of sorts.
I'm building a small, Gaul nation. That's what I'm giving birth to, a tiny French-like nation.
Yes, and previously in Europe was an equal opportunities employer that has good parental leave options. In that, either of the hosts can go on parental leave whenever they want, assuming they have an incoming child.
No, get rid of that caveat. That caveat sucks. Yeah. Hugh's going on parental leave as well.
Well, actually, we're about to get a gecko, so that's a... That's
nature's child.
Yeah, that's similar. I've heard they're like a lot of work. Babies kind of start taking care of themselves from a young age.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It'd be fine.
I don't know. When do you feel like in life you start doing that? Because I don't feel like I've done it yet.
Well, that's very concerning for your for your child. Anyway, so we're not totally sure exactly how long we're going to go on hiatus, but it'll be a little while for sure. So... In preparation for that, we're pausing the Patreon, so I've paused it. So if you're a patron, you don't need to do anything, you just will stop getting charged. So that's cool. We will probably not release any episodes. I might release the odd catch-up if something like very notable happens. Yes. But I would expect probably no episodes, or if I can wrangle some guest hosts, I might do the odd episode here and there. But assume probably no episodes for... At least a few months.
Either way, the Patreon won't get started again until we're back proper.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Really, the Patreon, you're paying for Kieran's presence.
No, you are paying for both of us. We would pause it too if Hugh left and it just became the Kieran show.
Yeah, no, that'd be weird. It makes more money. I don't.
It's just him talking about Cadillacs and dinosaurs for an hour and a half.
Cool. So we're gonna discuss some things that are on the horizon and some things we will miss inevitably that are set in stone, like elections. We're gonna briefly kind of discuss stuff that will be happening and our assumption as to what will happen. First thing that I wanted to talk about, which is quite far in the future, one of our listeners, who's updated us a few times on this, Maximilian, sent us information about Danish minority party in the north of Germany, who previously had not run in the parliamentary elections. And this came up because we had incorrectly stated that there is a rule in Germany that you can have a lower percentage threshold to get into the parliament if you're a minority party. But in practice, there isn't really minority parties that do that. And there is a Danish minority party, but they weren't running in previous parliamentary elections, but they are now planning to do that. They're planning to run parliamentary elections because I think quite rightly they're sick of people ignoring them. they're probably going to get in as well, because the number of votes they would need would be quite low. And they would need Maximilian put it correctly, they'd need 40 odd thousand votes, and that's kind of pretty similar to what they would get in a regional election. So they probably will get a seat. My prediction is that the German government will collapse abruptly any moment now, and there's going to be a snap election earlier. So there's supposed to be an election next year, but I think there'll be an early election, and then the Danish minority party will be the deciding vote to form a government, and they will be
kingmaker position.
Yeah, and first on the agenda will be really, really pro Danish ties legislation.
Denmark annexes Schleswig-Holstein.
Yes, yeah. The real goal is land exchange. Denmark don't really want anything.
Denmark gets Kosovo.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
An accident down at the country factory.
Yeah, the as someone suggested like this week, the EU is going to buy Greenland from Denmark for like the such a large amount of money that allows Denmark to kind of have a Norway style massive sovereign wealth fund. And Denmark becomes the new Saudi Arabia. That's the my prediction for the cascade that will it'll be called the Greenland Cascade in future history books.
The horrific chain events of just you voting for the Danish political party results in the hilarious Rube Goldberg device that ends up with like a Turkish journalist being murdered in Copenhagen.
Because he was going to spill the beans on the big deal.
like Greenland. Oh, so much money laundering, guys.
Yeah.
Everyone's involved.
Yeah, so I think that's it. I just wanted to shout out that tidbit. But I did that'll probably happen.
I'm going to roll the dice to see the likelihood.
Sweet.
10.
Out of what? How many dice?
12.
Out of 12. It was regular dice. Okay, sure.
Yeah, two regular dice, yeah.
Okay, well, that's, you know, that's...
we paused the Patreon. We don't have money for fancy dice.
10 and 12 chance. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool, we do want to talk about some elections. So there's some elections that will definitely happen that we'll miss and we will leave behind. But I think some of them are pretty clear what's going to happen.
Let's talk about it. So I guess the three elections that are going to happen are the Lithuanian parliamentary election, the Georgian parliamentary election, and the Moldovan presidential election.
Mm.
The Moldovan presidential election is between, this gets probably pretty simple, is a two-round system, and it will be held on the 1st of November 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that I'm not entirely understanding, though, is that while this is a the two-round system is actually different than the typical French two-round system. So the two-round system is a safety mechanism for turnout. The second round will happen if no candidate receives a majority of the vote in the first round with a voter turnout of at least 33%. So if it's lower than 33% and there's like, a shitty situation, then there will be a second round. Mm-hmm. There's a good few candidates running, but the only two that seem to be worth mentioning are Igor Dodon, who is the incumbent, and Maia Sandu. Igor Dodon comes from the PSRM, or the Party of Socialists of the Republic of Moldova. This is kind of like your continuation party of the kind of like socialist ruling party of Moldova, which was part of the USSR. However, it's like morphed into like vaguely social democratic party that just has a kind of pro-Russian foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the candidate Maia Sandu belongs to PAS or PAS, Action and Solidarity Party, which is a pro-EU liberal, as in like Lib Dem liberal centrist kind of party candidate. So opinion polling basically has it that it will be them in the first round, with like no one else breaking past even 5%.
Mm-hmm.
And second round is actually a bit of a toss-up. So like the interesting things about polling that happens in Moldova is what I find very interesting is they give you a will not vote option on the polls. Mm. So you can just say no, fuck it, and strong showing for will not vote in some of these polls.
Nice.
Yeah.
Moldova's quite a small country as well. It's like under 3 million. It's 2.6 ish.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's quite small. The last time they had this election, it was the same two candidates in 2016, and it was 52-47 for Dodon. So
yeah.
Um, that's a sign of, you know, politics not really moving. it's an election with the same two people again.
So yeah, I mean, I'd be very curious to see if there's been any kind of, will this be in any way like an indication of Dodon's rule? Like, are they going to be like, yeah, fuck you though? I'm actually not sure how they've been doing with the whole coronavirus thing. How people are feeling about how that situation's been handled in Moldova. And I'm also trying to find a turnout for the 2016 election. Can't find it, actually. But when you have a... Turnout was 53.5% for the second round.
Right.
And less than 50%, like 49.1% for the first round.
I see why they have the 33% rule. Internet rule. Because you're like, if we set it any higher, we'll start invalidating elections.
Very quickly, yes. So yeah, it's also just very possible that a good portion of Moldovans do not care about this election.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's often when it's the same people again, you're like, well, nothing's probably really changed.
Right.
It's often the way. As we'll see in the next French presidential election when it's Le Pen Macron again.
Yeah, right.
Cool, so that's that one. There's Lithuanian parliamentary election. What's the deal with that? That seems like it's closer in terms of some like the top party changing, but my understanding is the government is unlikely to change. Is that a correct assessment?
Yeah. As far as I understand, the 2016 election was a surprise landslide victory for the Farmers and Greens Union, which is one of those fun... No, they've been kicked out of the European Greens now because the leader of it just couldn't stop saying terrible things about gay people. So they got 54 seats in the Seimas. You need 71 for a majority, but that was the largest of any party. And they got, like, because it's a mixed member system, they got half of the single member constituencies. So the government that was kind of in place there, the Skvernal's cabinet, was, if I understand, this was a combination of the Lithuanian Farmers and Greens, Social Democratic, Labour Party. So it's unlikely that this will change. We might have... Current polling has the Homeland Union actually slightly ahead of the Greens. They're the like EPP center right party that's kind of like operating within Lithuania. But if polling is to be believed, chances are a government could be cobbled together with the Farmers and Greens. Like, the existing parties could still make a pretty sizable go. Basically, since the last election, the support for the Social Democratic Party of Labour hasn't changed. They've stayed in around the same. And there's been some dips and dives with the Greens. But now the campaigning has started, they've started excelling in the polls. So chances are it's going to be the same kind of government again, but like on borrowed time. If there's any kind of problems with that government, or if there's another election, then it's just the Homeland Union could take it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
yeah.
I think it's like sort of like the as you alluded to, like the Lithuanian Farmers and Greens Union is like a conservative like party, really. Like it's a agrarian green party. They tend to be quite like quite conservative generally. They're not like that different to the Homeland Union in some respects, but you know, green.
Yeah, I guess it's the difference, really, I would say, or like one of the big notable differences is the fixation on agrarianism. As Lithuanian Farmers and Green Union suggests, their like social base are farm owners, I should say. Like, I think when people have, it's important to say when people think of farmers, they kind of think of, I don't know, how we probably think of farmers throughout most of, you know, 18th and 19th century history,
yeah,
rather than modern farmers, which are just massive landowners. So it's a very conservative social base, but it's one that fixates maybe more on like rural development,
mm-hmm,
like agrarian culture, rather than homeland union, which might have more of a cities professionals,
yeah,
and suburban professionals kind of base.
Yeah. The the former name of the Lithuanian Farmers and Green Union is the Lithuanian Peasant Popular Union. So
mm-hmm,
that might be more
is this population of farmers aggrieved in some way? Possibly have a chip on their shoulder?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, so that, like, I mean, that's, I think that, like, there is a potential for that to be, like, an upset of some sort, because there was last time, so that's potentially something to watch, but while the outcome of who comes first might change, it's probably unlikely that the government formation will be particularly different.
Yeah.
Cool, so that's another one. Then there's the Georgian parliamentary election, which, I don't know anything about this. Do you know anything about this?
We are possibly looking at, okay, so I just need to refamiliarize myself with 2016 Georgian election.
Mm.
2016 Georgian election saw a complete collapse of like the center left ENM or United National Movement party, with losing 38 seats. And Georgian Dream, the political party named for a rap song by the party founders rapping albino son, God, I wish I was making any of this up, gained 30 seats. Interestingly, with this election, I guess we have some kind of changes.
Mm-hmm.
The Georgian Dream Party, while in government, has changed the electoral system to a full party-less proportional representation without an electoral threshold.
Uh-huh. What was it before?
That is a good question. I think it was mixed member, if I remember correctly. We can take a look at the 2016 election.
Yeah.
Electoral system, unicameral parliament are elected by two methods, 77 proportional representation in a single national level constituency, and then a two-round system of single-member constituencies.
Oh, no, I don't. Two-round systems are stupid. I don't normally side with Georgian Dream, especially on their on their music choices, but I'm on board with this, because it's two-round systems, I think, are just... And also, making it, like, half and half just makes it very unclear to low information is the wrong word, but someone who's not like constantly paying attention to this, it'd be very difficult to like see how like your constituency matters at all in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that will No, you'll hate this actually then, because what he's changing the system is to a closed list proportional representation.
Oh, right.
So
yeah.
That's for 77 of the seats, with the remaining 73 will be single-member constituencies using a modified two-round system,
uh-huh,
in which candidates who have to receive over 30% of the valid vote to win the first round, a second round has to be held the top two candidates if there was no winner of the first round. So, you know how the French system has a two-round system? If you get 50% in the first round, there's no second round.
Yes.
Because you've gotten a clear majority. That's
yes.
They've taken that and made it slightly worse by making the cutoff in the first round 30%. So you just get a bunch of people who can get voted in when 70% of people don't like you.
Why did they get rid of the electoral threshold? That seems like a terrible idea.
Oh, to let the crazies in.
Why do they want to do that?
They've also expanded the number of seats. More crazies. Look, I want my rapping albino son to have a seat in the Georgian parliament, and frankly, I don't think we can do it without fudging how the system works. He's not that likable amongst the electorate.
I have a dream, a Georgian dream. you won't like it.
No. Speaking of that aspect of it, leading in the polls is Georgian Dream. They currently have 115 seats with 48.77% of the vote. Mm. Polling kind of has them, like, most recent poll has them at 52%, but that does seem to be a bit of an oddity.
Yeah, I think that's an unusual poll.
Yeah, yeah, that does look like unusual. But they're straddling somewhere between... they're like high 30s is the most recent trend. Mm. And leadership has changed of Georgian Dream. Mm-hmm. Because in the last election, it was Georgi Kirvirikashvili. Uh-huh. There we go. And now it's back to Bidzina Ivanishvili, who is the richest person in Georgia, the founder of Georgian Dream and the father of the rapping albino son. He's okay. While he was away, he was largely viewed as still in control of the party.
Yeah, right.
But now it's formalized, so that's good.
Cool. Just a quick correction. So they haven't got rid of the electoral threshold. It's 1% for the proportional seats, which is still hilariously low.
But, yeah, and for the closed list, it's been lowered to 3% rather than 5%.
Yeah, yeah, which is fine. This will potentially be very strange. Something weird could happen at any moment because it's Georgia. I also wouldn't be surprised if Georgian Dream just does, like, relatively well, gets, like, most of the seats.
Mm.
Seems fine, I guess.
Unfortunately, Poll of Polls doesn't have the Georgian polling aggregate because politico.eu does not agree with my definition of Europe.
Well, that's fine. They can be wrong if they want, but...
Yeah.
As long as they're professionally wrong.
Mm, yes.
There's also potentially going to be a Romanian legislative election for their parliament, but it's unclear when that happened. Basically, they can it's supposed to happen this year at some point, but they haven't announced a date. And I mean, it could go several ways. Because basically, for people who don't remember, what happened, the Social Democratic Party were in charge and were riddled with corruption charges and tried to change laws so that their party cronies could get out of prison, where they were in prison for corruption charges. So that government collapsed, which was not really a surprise to anybody. And now there's like a minority liberal government.
Mm.
Which confusingly is also run by someone called Orban, which is really just, like, based on that alone, I'm not for it. I'm against it because it's confusing.
Ludovic Orban, yeah.
Yeah, which, I mean, Ludovic, that's Romanian Victor, so.
it's Victor in Romanian, yes.
Yeah.
Actually, Victor is just like a name in Romania.
I know that. I need to.
Yeah, as far as last I read about this on like the next Romanian election, they're kind of tentatively saying early December.
Yeah,
but the kind of murmuring on the ground is that due to coronavirus and stuff, it could be pushed to early 2021. Next,
yeah. I think that's fine. Like, as in, that seems like the correct thing to be doing. Really, Like, realistically, I don't think anyone should be having elections when there's... as in, the ramp up of coronavirus... Like, we can talk about coronavirus now in a minute. But, like, the ramp up of cases, like, in the UK, for instance, has literally been the last 6 days or so has been when it's become clear that cases are actually going up relatively, like, in relatively broad areas as opposed to... small rises in cases due to like localized outbreaks, whereas now it's kind of like at the point where it would be difficult to pinpoint general like small local areas that are causing the number of cases to crop up. And I think because of the speed at which that could happen, it's very irresponsible to like declare a like say you declared now oh, in December we're gonna have December 15th we're gonna have an election. It's like, well, that's you realistically can't predict that, and that would be like in Romania, that would be the height of cold and flu season as well as potentially another coronavirus resurgence. And it just didn't seem like a good idea, because then you're just gonna have to cancel the election, and then what was the point of it? You've just created a weird period where people were pretending there was an election even though everyone knew it was gonna possibly fall apart.
So there's two things in regards to that, which is, number one, Korea successfully had an election during coronavirus, and the way they handled it was pretty good, and it's been a while since then.
Yeah,
I feel like if you're very gung-ho about having an election, you could just copy this model. Secondly, and I found very interesting, it does seem like Babish in the Czech Republic is doing a Vucic at the moment, is doing a Serbian election thing. So there's Czech local elections happening soon.
Oh, no.
And it does look like, from what people are saying, that numbers are being fudged about new cases in the Czech Republic.
Right.
To justify reopening the country and holding the elections.
Yeah, see, I think this is the thing, is that, like, I think comparing any of this stuff to South Korea, where effectively, due to SARS and MERS, Karen is pouring coffee. It is very audible in the mic.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was weird.
Just
wanted to make it clear, you aren't, like, podcasting from the toilet or something.
No, okay.
Yeah, so I think basically saying, oh, you could look at South Korea and you could do it that way. But, like, the South Korean system exists due to them having had years and years of prep for the next one of these. And there being, like, a very clear setup in place to run contact tracing and stuff, which effectively, anyone who's tried to replicate that system in, like, 6 months has not been able to do it because the infrastructure isn't there, and, like, the political will to spend that kind of money is not there either. Because if you wanted to wrap this up slowly and build it, it would be a lot easier to do rather than just, like, last minute being like, cool, so we need to hire thousands of people to run contact tracing. How would we do that? I guess we'll have to, like, hire a consulting firm, and then it won't go well. Comparatively to a lot of European countries, like, so people kind of, like, are looking at, well, Germany has done a relatively good job at, like, their testing capacity, at least, like, from that perspective alone.
Yeah,
I would still not trust them to run an election with their testing capacity at the height, like, at their high. Yeah. And I definitely wouldn't trust most European countries who haven't had to go through a big pandemic in any of their lifetimes before to, you know, responsibly run an election, because the temptation that there is just to be like, well, it's been fine and we can just have the election normally, and then because you haven't built up the public trust over years to kind of say that this system works, you're either going to have people doing dangerous behavior that you've all acknowledged is dangerous and you think is fine, or you're going to have a turnout bump down.
There was an interesting sentiment on the Trillbillies podcast, which they kind of came to the conclusion that they were like, I don't know what needs to happen for me to think this is over. And that's like, that's an interesting thought. I don't think people are really thinking about the, like, end of this so much. They're thinking about the time after, and they're in a kind of longing sense. But at the moment, most people are preoccupied with day to day, getting through stuff, considering, like, many people are losing their jobs and whatnot.
Yeah.
But, like, that isn't a very interesting thought, and I wonder if people have like thought about this, like, what needs to happen for you personally out there in listener land to think this is over, it's okay now. And I'm very curious about that kind of, like, question, and how that's probably going to affect things like an election being held. Like, especially, like, it's conceivable that this could be over, that we could have a vaccine by the middle of 2021. And we can talk about distribution or whatnot. And then it could be conceivable for the 2021, like, it will be held in winter around, like, September or so, federal German election to go off as normal, quote unquote.
Yeah.
But I wonder what effect of going through this will have on turnouts, people's reactions to it.
Yeah, I think confidence in, like, in some countries more than others, confidence in, like, government guidance for these kind of things will have changed massively. Because I think, so, like, in March, when, like, our office originally closed, there was kind of talk of, oh, well, people might be back in September, like, or back before September, maybe in August, and it'll be fine. But then because the UK government on multiple occasions has been like, it's fine, and then a few weeks later being like, actually, in second thoughts, it's not fine, we've changed the rules again. Or it's not fine if you live here, where we've had to change the rules completely. And it turns out we were lying about testing capacity the whole time. So it turns out our test and trace system doesn't work. It's like, cool, so you don't know how many cases there are, and you don't know if it's fine. So, like, you've actually completely smashed any public confidence in that, because our original talking about it was like, oh, if cases were, say, like, under 100 for 2 weeks, then we consider just going back to the office. And you're like, well, that's never happened. And multiple times the government has come out and been like, it's fine, don't worry about it. So, like, if there was an election here, I would have no confidence that they wouldn't have just been like, it's fine, don't worry about it. Because they postponed the mayoral elections in London, but the only reason they did that was because they were supposed to be in March.
right.
And they postponed them for a year because it was simpler to just postpone them for a year rather than to acknowledge, like, well, we don't know when we needed to postpone them till, and it's much easier just to keep it on the same cycle and do all the same stuff.
We have all the leaflets that have March 9th 2020 on it. Just ignore the 2020 bit, but it's still March 9th.
Yeah, but that was I think quite responsible. But if there was supposed to be a parliamentary election and it was due roughly around December, I would have no confidence that they wouldn't just try and, like, fudge something at the last minute that was that to make it appear okay, and then to either put people in a dangerous situation or to have to postpone it, or there to be a massive drop in turnout or something. And you're just like, well. And then you can't campaign and stuff, like, it massively alters the kind of all this kind of stuff. I think especially from the perspective of like any US listeners, I think the idea, because the US has, like, fixed election schedules, basically nowhere in Europe does that. There's no, like, every 4 years on the first Thursday of the month we have an election.
Yeah,
it's all, like, parliamentary terms, things get dissolved, you can have early elections at any time, in principle.
At best, you have caveats for, you have time ranges.
Yes, yeah. But there's never a, like, a forced, oh, your thing is 2 terms on this exact date.
One correction.
All right.
Belgium does.
Oh, Belgium does. Well, I mean, but they never have a government in place.
Yeah. So there's other problems there, but Belgium does because they've synced their elections with the European Union elections, which also have fixed terms.
Yeah, but But the European Parliament doesn't operate like a regular parliament.
No.
Any national
the Belgian Parliament does.
Yeah, well, I mean, but they never have, like, as in, if you count from the government formation to the date there has to be an election. I think that's not going to last.
They still haven't formed a government.
No,
since the 2019 elections.
Yeah, which I wanted to talk about. They have a technocratic government in place. But that's the thing, as in, like, there's not the same kind of, like, fixed structure. So there isn't the artificial pressure of, you need to work out how to run this election because otherwise it can't happen, and you need to figure something else out that's never been done. Whereas here, like, there is scope to kind of come to a consensus in a parliament and be like, well, can we all agree just not to have the election and keep going on our emergency coronavirus measures? That seems probably fine in most cases. If there's like an active threat of, like, a resurgence, which I think for the winter there is, at least for the next few months. There's been upticks in Spain, there's upticks in France, there's upticks in Belgium.
The second wave is here. It's happened. There's uptick in Germany as well. They've just managed to keep on top of it in terms of, like, so, like, Germany has their, like, recover rate, people who've recovered from
it, and
that's keeping up with the uptick. So, for that reason, a lot of people are just, like, kind of not concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But the number of cases are increasing, and it's probably going to be a This is a very safe prediction. There'll probably be another lockdown of sorts.
Some sort, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, like, England already has that whole reduced gatherings thing put into place.
Yeah. I was going to say, when that happened, everyone I like that is still in the country that is therefore aware of the coronavirus restrictions, none of us were sure what the number was, like the number of people you were allowed to have a gathering was, because they changed the rules so frequently. And that the criticism is like, well, the rules are never clear when you change them. You're never specific. So when they reduced the 6, they reduced from 30. I wasn't aware that you could have 30 people at a gathering.
Yeah, but there was also things like 30 people at a gathering, please no house parties of 30 people or something like that. It was all very strange.
Yeah, it was 30 people at a gathering outside with some caveats. And then now it's 6, unless it's a funeral, which fine, but or wedding. I'm like, nah, that's just a, okay, you don't, that seems like an exemption based on someone, like people being angry about it, as opposed to it being like a sensible thing. And then, or
it's
for
or, as well.
Yeah, it's there's other work exemption as well. So it's like if it's like a work 30 people, more than 30 person gathering, basically that's so they don't have to close construction sites and some offices that are bigger that they don't want to close. Which, I mean, again, this is exactly what they did at this, like the last time. They refused to close certain things because they were like, the economic costs would be too high, and then it's just gonna blow up in their face again. So,
but then like, the UK as a whole have also kind of been a patchwork. I was talking to a friend of mine who lives in the outskirts of Glasgow, and that part of Scotland has like completely gone back to original lockdown, like only allowed leave the house to get like groceries, effectively. So there's like that kind of aspect. Belgium had very strict lockdown in place and will probably return to it at some point.
Spain is pretending they're not going to bring back their lockdown, but I don't think that's
realistic. Yeah. I suspect, I don't know, a lot of this, I feel like my prediction in general as a kind of sweeping statement, maybe I won't like say this for any particular European country, but I suspect the lockdowns that are brought back will not be as strict as the lockdowns that were put in place first time around, because they're feeling the economic burn, I want to say, and they would like to not feel it if they can.
Yeah,
because like one of the reasons like people can say, oh they're allowing weddings, that's kind of emotional or whatever, but another reason they could say that you're allowing weddings is because, unlike your house party where you buy like a couple of bottles of wine, a wedding is a massive industry. Like it's there's a huge amount of money involved in any individual wedding, never mind like a bunch of them. So yeah, there's probably an incentive there to keep that going. It's also the reason behind why like schools are returning, even though they really shouldn't be, because it's basically the idea of freeing up people to go back to work. Like schools for a lot of parents act as a kind of state funded childcare system,
and that's what it is, because the, you know, if you talk to a lot of teachers, they're like, well, this isn't actually a very efficient way of learning, so class, and a lot of countries' class sizes are of a number that you're like, well, this is daycare.
Yeah,
to some extent. I personally don't remember anything I learned in school. So,
I had this discussion recently with someone about like Irish, because that's a fraught topic. But they were like, it was like, we should be teaching people useful stuff, and I'm just like, nothing that you learn, particularly in secondary school, is like useful to everyone. It might be useful for you, but like my personal experience of what I did in college, the only thing that was useful for me in secondary school was like my art class. But for the majority of people who take art class in secondary school, it's not useful for their life experience at all.
And that's I mean, you do very little maths in your
God no, yeah. It's creeping back into my life now, but still.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's your fault. That's a personal choice, Kieran. Don't push your beliefs on me. I do a lot of maths in my life, unfortunately. Anyway,
I chose French over German. God fucking damn it.
That is very funny. So the coronavirus. The second wave is almost certainly just going to continue getting worse. I think there's a lot of the same mistakes that we made again. While there's a lot of infrastructure in terms of like, there won't be the kind of like ventilator shortages due to short-term thinking, because people have like taken the time to be like, if they are available, we've purchased them now. Not to say that there won't be shortages of supplies and things like ventilators and beds, but it's more of a, it's not a case of like, oh, it's just because we never didn't think we need them.
I would also say that like grocery supply chains have probably been secured.
Yes, more so for sure, definitely. Yeah. For things that, yeah, exactly, like things like toilet paper and stuff. And a lot of that was artificial due to messaging around what lockdown meant and stuff.
Yeah,
in a lot of places. Of course. Suppliers that were geared towards commercial supply but didn't have the correct packaging to put it in a supermarket and stuff. Yeah. Stuff like that. But it's unclear like what measures places are going to have to put in, but I think that you're seeing again the resistance to certain things that seems to be misplaced. So like there was hubbub this week because the European Parliament finally announced yesterday, I think, that they weren't going to go to Strasbourg for their plenary sessions this time. Though in the EU treaties, technically they have to. But they've now like unilaterally been like, we're not doing it because it's a risk. And several French government officials, including their prime minister, were like, we don't think this was a good thing for them to have decided by themselves. We think that they should have gone to Strasbourg, because Strasbourg has fewer cases than Brussels. And you're like, that is a terrible argument for bringing people from Brussels to Strasbourg.
Yeah, right?
You know what? Strasbourg is very safe. You should all come to Strasbourg, but they might be infected. Oh.
Well, yeah, because it's not the... like I think the other problem with that is like a lot of people envision it as just the MPs going in their like private cars, and as far as I understand, like that is how they transport between Brussels and Strasbourg for the majority of them. It's just the like however long car drive in their private car, which is quite cushy on an individual level, but they also have a staff that isn't in the car and are probably taking trains
and buses
or
and stuff,
driving themselves or whatever, and that's going to cause problems. But the like, yeah, I'd be so interested if coronavirus is like the death of Strasbourg as the parliament.
Yeah,
it finally happens. Yeah. The support the troops EU issue that is like get rid of Strasbourg parliament happens because of the fucking virus.
That'd be incredible. I'd love that. That would be really good.
So good. Because it's something we want to happen, it won't. Other thing that's interesting about coronavirus that I think will also present itself as a problem is, this is kind of a coordination thing, but like maybe a less material one, but you get stories, drips and drabs in of various EU countries, various European countries doing things regarding coronavirus that are good. Mm. Like, but the distinct thing is always that not all of them are doing this. And... yeah. Yeah, there should be probably a little bit more like copying the homework, because one of the things that like Spain is doing quite well at the moment while lockdown is eased and stuff is they've set up these like testing centers in like malls, like shopping center kind of things, that are exclusively for people under the age of 20.
Oh, hey, right. That's clever.
And they're like, they're basically trying to understand and mass test asymptomatic people.
Mm.
And because they're like trying to find out what's the situation with like teenage spreaders, for example, because like teenagers are very likely to be asymptomatic, but actually still have the virus. Mm. And that's like super interesting. And people I know who are like in this, I don't know, immunology and whatnot, or like medicine or stuff, like look at this and go, that's a really good idea. And then you look into it a bit more, it's like, yeah, only Spain is doing this.
Yeah. Whereas in the UK, the scandal now is that they've run out of tests. Well, I think they have the physical test, but they don't have the lab space to test, to like process the number of tests they have. And there, the government's reasoning for this is too many asymptomatic people are getting tested. we didn't mean get tested that much. It's like,
right,
people are idiots. It's so stupid.
That's like the exact opposite of what I've heard criticisms of what's happening in the UK, where they're only testing the elderly, and the compromised. But
yeah, but it's basically so they have the testing capacity available like four hospitals, I think there might be some like intentional testing for the elderly, but basically the system by which if you suspect you might have COVID and the guidance is to go get a test, there is no testing capacity available. A lot of places, especially outside of the cities, the nearest testing center is like, you know, triple digits miles away. Because a lot of the testing centers have like temporarily closed due to lack of capacity. Those are two contrasts of basically like the, I think this is kind of like a really clear argument for having decided at an EU level, for instance, to have a given powers of some sort to the Center for Disease Control to actually like force national governments to adhere to some sort of standard. Because while the EU is like focused on like, you know, changes in border arrangements and stuff and trying to mediate that kind of those kind of negotiations, effectively the problem still remains that there is no consensus on what like an approach is, and there has never been one. And there doesn't look like there's going to be one that will just manifest by itself. Having a kind of more top-down version of that for when there is, you know, it's kind of different to talk about when there is relatively low penetration, but when there is like mass outbreaks in multiple countries at once, it stops being sensible to kind of have it, oh, well, Spain can come up with whatever they want to do and Germany can come up with whatever they want to do, rather than having a more centrally agreed on system of protocols to go through. I guess getting people to agree on them is more difficult, but still, I think it's, you've ended up with a very complicated patchwork and it's not really getting better. Anyway.
Before we wrap up, do we have any other predictions?
Oh yeah, so I wanted to briefly breeze through some of our like things that we had were going to talk about but hadn't got around to yet. There was you know what never cropped back up but I'm assuming is happening in the background? Do you remember the scandal von der Leyen was involved with, where she like for procurement of services for the German army?
Okay.
And that like they requested her official mobile phone, but then when the investigators received it had been wiped of data, and von der Leyen's office claimed it was a mistake.
Okay.
So I assume at some point the investigation will come to nothing. nothing bad will happen to von der Leyen. Hungary's freedom of the press is going to continue to decline because everyone's very well distracted by coronavirus, so no one's paying attention to it. People may be aware that one of the big news sites in Hungary had a mass exodus of staff because there was basically a takeover by government aligned people, and there was going to be changes in editorial standards. / there has been now, so that's cool. So I think that'll continue to get worse, and will just become a bigger and bigger story, that won't improve itself. Belarus, Lukashenko will call new elections and he will win with the exact same percentage. And they'll have to have the protests again, and we'll end up in a Groundhog Day style Belarus situation. What else did I have? What is up with Belgium? Are Belgium going to get a government? I say no. There's currently formation talks happening again. I think they won't happen.
It won't go anywhere.
And at some point when we're back, we should talk about the utility of Belgium having a government at all, because potentially, like, Belgium should just be agreed on as like a central blob of the EU that has no elected government. It just has like a technocracy that just exists to run, because, you know, people love Washington DC and how it doesn't have control over, like, a lot of agency over its own budget and stuff. What if we replicated that but in Europe?
Oh no. With like one of the most historically fraught political entities.
So I want to do the opposite of DC statehood. I want to do Belgium, like, dissolve Belgium into a utopia. So that'd be good. That might happen. If that happens, if that doesn't happen, we should talk about why it should happen at some point, or shouldn't happen. I don't know. We'll find out. The EU enlargement stuff won't go anywhere because, one, it's supposed to go very slowly, but also everyone's distracted and aren't paying attention to it.
Yeah, I'm going to push back on that slightly, and I say before we come back, Turkey will finally be a member of the EU. With the new 96 Turkish MEPs. Let's go. Let's fucking go. It will happen because Turkey will claim that the entirety of the EU, it has, like, it has sea drilling rights over it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that was, it was something that this happened. When did this happen? That was it last year? It was May last year. We were going to talk about Turkey's, like, renewed insistence that they had oil drilling rights in, like, basically in Cyprus.
Yeah.
And the EU were like, I don't think so. And this is actually not great for the Cyprus peace talks and stuff.
Would it surprise you to know that that whole situation has effectively gone nowhere?
Yeah, that has not resolved. And Turkey are still saying, we're pretty sure we have oil drilling rights. And the EU were like, no.
Yeah, there were like French ships deployed. It was like looking like the dumbest war was going to start.
Yeah, between multiple NATO members.
Between multiple NATO members and Lebanon, a country that currently has its shit together.
Yes. That'll be fine. So I think Turkey will just Turkey's gonna sort itself out in the meantime. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
And if that's an indication for how long we'll be away, then so be it. I think it'll all be fine, and Ciaran's new child will grow up to be president of Germany.
That'd be a pretty cushy job, actually. You don't really do anything.
No, right? I mean, yeah. I wouldn't want to inflict work on your offspring.
God, no. I'm just very anti-work, but only specifically for my child. And with that has been another episode of Previously in Europe. Previously in Europe is produced and recorded by Hugh O'Brien and Ciaran Dold. If you like the show, you can donate money after we come back from me having a child. You can do that at patreon.com/previouslyineurope, but not for a while. So if you want to help us out in the future after we come back, you can have your name read aloud like these cool cats. Smero, Echo2100, Svenfest, Petra V, Patrick Seba, Newt Alexander, Michael Hall, Jerry's Arian, Niall McLaughlin, Subliminal Kid, and Dermot Burke and Justin Paul Sammons. So if you want to donate some money to us, you can. That would be great. But not for a while, because I'm having a child. If you want to wish me well on me becoming a papa, then you can do so on our various social medias. At Prev in Europe is our Twitter handle, PREV in Europe, as well as we have a Previously in Europe Facebook page. You can find all of this information by going to previouslyineurope.eu. Thanks for listening.